Welcome to Leading the Shift, a podcast from Microsoft Azure, where we hear from the people at the forefront of data, AI, and cloud technologies. I'm your host, Susan Ettlinger. In tennis, you have two players, only one of whom will win the point. In baseball, you have a team of nine, but the pitcher can face only one batter at a time. But in basketball, it's a completely different story. On any play, any player can handle the ball and can shoot, so there are almost infinite variations of what can happen. So the job of basketball analytics is to look at what combinations of the players, the ball, and different spatial coordinates unlock different outcomes. Today, we're going to explore the world of data and basketball, where some of the most sophisticated analytics and AI tools are helping the NBA turn billions of data points into insightful metrics to delight fans. My guest is Charlie Rolfe, Vice President, Stats Technology Product Development for the NBA. We're going to talk about how his team helps the NBA deliver compelling experiences for its fans on and off the court. Charlie, welcome to Leading the Shift.
Thank you, Susan. You make my job sound so fun. I love it.
It sounds fun to me. Although you know and I know that I'm not incredibly knowledgeable about basketball. So I am learning. And the funny thing is, last week I was talking to somebody about non-Newtonian physics. Again, not a strong suit for me. So it's been a really fun education. But anyway, so let's talk about you. I would love to hear about you and your career journey and sort of what got you to this point.
This will be the first time I've followed non-Newtonian physics in any sort of professional endeavor. But after the cool intro, I appreciate you knocking me down a peg here to get put back in the proper place. But I'll start my background. I have to go way back to college where I was an undergraduate at Duke University. And I technically majored in computer science, but I was a student manager for the basketball team for all 4 years and got the honor to work with Coach K and all the great players and staff at Duke, and really secretly majored in basketball in addition to my computer science, and was at every practice, every game for 4 years. So I majored in computer science, but really was at basketball all the time and had a great experience there and learned a lot about the game and learned so much from Coach K and the coaches that has been beneficial to me throughout my career here. And I'm hopefully we'll touch on some of that, but I have to tell one funny story to start, which was we would always film every practice, which was a great start for me as a future computer vision person. But we were up high in the rafters and I was filming the practice and Coach K stopped the practice and had a very intense discussion with the players, and the gym falls silent when Coach K talks, as it should. He's brilliant and everyone wants to listen. And I'm in the catwalk trying to fix the camera and I dropped the piece of the camera off the catwalk. Oh. And it crashed on the court in this moment of quiet in front of the, and Coach K looks up at me and goes, "Charlie," and it was white as a ghost, and goes, "Don't jump." And it was great. It was a great lesson in leadership too, because it was this incredibly important moment. We're preparing for a big game and Coach is this incredible competitor and incredibly intense person, and so much learn from there. But you also learn that, there's other things that are important in life and you have to have some brevity too, and that things are going to go wrong, and it's how you adapt to those things, right? That sets you apart. You
know? Absolutely. So how did you get from majoring in basketball to your kind of computer vision expertise?
I was always fascinated by computer vision, and I had worked with video a lot as a manager. And then after doing some other things after college, I was coaching in the afternoons. I coached high school basketball, as well as some other sports. And I started taking classes at DePaul University in Chicago and got a master's in computer vision. And it was fascinating to me. I was doing my class project on the video of our high school team playing and did my thesis on that and saw it through, and then ended up working for a vendor of the NBA that ended up building the first computer vision system that was deployed league wide. And, they were doing it much better than I ever would have done it by myself, but it was, an awesome experience to be a computer vision engineer and pair that with basketball. It was a perfect fit for me, and, get to leverage those computer science and AI and machine learning skills, but then also do it with basketball as a subject matter. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, particularly for this game, where so much is fluid and so much is happening in the moment, and
And so much is, you know, one player being relative to another player and trying to understand sort of how those different combinations come to some kind of an outcome in the game. I mean, I think that's a super fascinating thing. And I think, you know, it would be really interesting because obviously computer vision has evolved tremendously, you know, over the last several years and certainly over the last decade. Some context on how basketball analytics has also evolved because the game has evolved, the way we understand the game has evolved, the technology has evolved. So like, you know, what can you share about that?
Sure. You're right on in that, especially in the intro too, that basketball is so fast and so fluid and it's very hard to measure empirically or analytically. But the advent of the tracking data has added to that. But before we get to that, we should start at the beginning, right? It was for many, many years since the beginning of the NBA up until 1996, all we had was the aggregate box score, right? What you'd see in the newspaper, the count of the shots, the count of the rebounds and so forth. And then from 96 forward, we had play-by-play, so we would know when those events took place, and that allowed us to analyze lineups and interactions between players and whether, you know, when the various events happened, not just in the aggregate at the game level. And that persisted until, you know, the early 2010s when the player tracking system came online. That'd be kind of the third era of this for basketball analytics, and that unlocked player tracking data, but it was just a single data point, a single center of mass for every player throughout the course of the game. And obviously, that's incredible. There's still so much to do with that. But now in this past year, we're entering kind of the fourth era of data availability for basketball analytics, and that's the having our pose data, player pose tracking data, as we call it, where we have 29 body parts of every player tracked in three dimensions 60 times a second for the entire game.
Okay, wait. That's a lot of body parts. So can you give some examples? Like, what are you actually tracking?
Well, my classic example is, because I have young kids, is we play the head, shoulders, knees, and toes game. And we're tracking all the key body parts of the player, from their head, shoulders, elbows, wrists, out to fingers, hips, knees, ankles, feet, etc. So we're tracking 29 body parts throughout the course of the game, 60 times a second. That's the frame rate of the camera that's generating the data. And it just creates this incredibly valuable but insightful data set that describes the game as it's taking place in a way that we've never been able to do before.
Yeah, I was chatting about this with a couple of people and I was like, what's that? What's that odd number? Is that the head? Is it the neck? Like, because we're symmetrical, we humans, right?
Yes, many of them are in pairs, but there's a head, center of mass, and like a center of the hips type of, there's a couple additional ones that get us to the odd number, but you're the first person to ever key in on that, Susan. I don't think anybody's ever pointed out that it's an odd number.
Well, you know, what can I say? It's a disease I have. But did you start with 29? Like, was that, did you sat down and map them all out, or was it something that you ramped up?
I'm not by any means a biomechanist in terms of, there's a whole field that is now using this data. Of course, they existed before this data, but that studies the human body, and that was a choice that worked with our vendor in terms of what was the logical set that would adequately describe the player and still be within the, you know, what the technology can do and so forth.
That's interesting though, because it makes me wonder, like, maybe as the technology becomes more advanced over time, maybe there are more sort of nuanced things that you can track that you would add to that 29.
Oh, absolutely. I think we're not at the end of the of this journey either. There's more things that we will track. I think in time we will hopefully be tracking, you know, the entire kind of surface. You know, in computer vision, it would be the foreground and background subtraction, but doing it in three dimensions of the entire surface of the player. That would be the hope long term. But yeah, we're at the cutting edge of technology, and we hope technology will get there too soon.
Yeah, no, that's intense. So, and then the other thing is, you know, obviously not just the static body parts, but the way those body parts move in space. You track 25 plus dunk metrics, player position, takeoff distance, things like that.
Yeah, you're jumping ahead a little bit there. There's a few steps in the middle, but
Back me up.
While that data set is incredible, it's important to remember that the 29 body parts 60 times a second, in and of itself, doesn't make a product, right? It's not, you can't really engage fans with that. You can't engage coaches with that or media members with that, right? That's too much data for them to, and we have all these processes to analyze that and really distill it down. And I'm stealing somebody else's joke here, a data scientist in the field, but who is studying and said it's the best compression algorithm in the history of computer science. And then we take this 29 body parts 60 times a second and distill it down to dunks or drives or dribbles or ball screens. And that is, you know, credible ability to kind of take out the parts. It's all meaningful, but take out the parts that aren't relative to what we're looking for and focus on things that are meaningful to all our stakeholders. And as you allude to, Dunk Score is one of our newest ones that we're really excited about. And you're right. We calculate 25 interesting things about every dunk. First, we detect the dunk. So there's a whole algorithm to detect a dunk with milliseconds of latency. And then we calculate 25 or more interesting things about that dunk to come up with a score of the dunk and to help engage the fans, right? It shows what is incredible about the athletes and what they're doing on the court and also sparks some debate and creates engagement and leads to a lot of great business outcomes for us in that respect too.
And let's talk about that. Like what, you know, you take all, you now have these metrics and I'm sure there are many, many others. How do you use them? I mean, you have a lot of different stakeholders. There are a lot of different ways you use the data. I wanted to give us a little more sense of that.
It's a great question. Probably the most important part of my job at this point is effectively being that kind of product manager, right? Where we have so many stakeholders, so many use cases, so many ways that we can make use of this incredibly valuable, interesting data. How do we prioritize it? And how do we decide what to do? And there's so many things we can do, but we have to be select in it. And I think that's true of a lot of businesses, right? But we certainly listen to our customers a lot. We listen to our fans a lot. We're always talking to our 30 teams. And even within the teams, there's the front office, the coaching staff, right? The player health teams, all of them want something from the data. And how do we make sure we're doing things that are going to have the best return on investment for our time when it comes to analyzing this data set?
Wow. So, you know, it feels like that must be a number of different levels or steps to get to that. So first, I guess there's that, like, what's the signal and the noise of these multiple billions of data points? And then of that signal, what's meaningful signal for different stakeholders for different purposes? I mean, that must be like, how do you figure that out?
There's no magic formula, but
darn it.
It's been incredibly valuable for me in my career to have a background in basketball and at a very high level and having learned from some of the best basketball people in the world. That gives me both a background of information, but also the ability to go talk to other basketball coaches and other general managers and analytics staff and be able to speak their language, even though they're doing that every day. But I can at least have a conversation with them and understand their pain points and what they'd like to get out of the data and bring that back to our computer vision engineers and our data scientists and our database experts and figure out how we build a product that will be useful to them. And then also lean on all of our product managers who do the same for our fans and for our media members and all the other walks of life that we want to engage with this data.
Yeah. So I think, in terms of the fans, I mean, the NBA app is pretty amazing. There's so much in it and so many different ways to kind of experience it depending on your level of knowledge and your level of engagement. So, you know, what if some of the things that you're doing or have done with the NBA app and also, like, let's talk about court optics too. I mean, I'd love to get a sense of sort of how all of this information is coming to life in actual experiences that fans can have in terms of understanding the mechanics of the game and of course, trends in basketball and all of that.
Absolutely. If there's one North Star for our team, it's that we want to educate and engage our fans. So the more we can do to teach fans about basketball, to help them understand the incredible players and athletes on the court and what makes them so special and why they're such good players and what they do well, that educational process leads to more engagement and it leads to good outcomes and, you know, helps make our products better, right? And the more we can do that, with just all of our data, whether it's back to the historical record books at the beginning of the league or the latest cutting edge tracking data, we're doing something right if we're educating and engaging our fans. So as it relates to the newest tracking data, it's about that distillation, that process of finding the interesting tidbits of first, we have to find all the drives, and then we can tell you how often the player drives to the left or to the right. And then we can tell you what their efficiency is or how often they pull up for a jump shot or drive all the way to the rim. And then you can find these insights. So then you can start delivering them to the fan and we can curate them. We can personalize them and we can ask you, what's the most interesting thing you found from the insights in your research?
So, you know, one of the things that's been a little challenging for me to wrap my head around has been the question of where you start. So because the game is such a relative game, I mean, do you start from the outcome? In other words, do you reverse the process by starting from where the foul occurred or the ball went in the basket? Or like, how do you actually map that process so that you can understand how something led to something else?
It depends on the stat, to be honest. But in many ways, it's not our place necessarily to say what one thing led to another thing. You know, you'd have to be in the huddle with the coach to know those things, right? There was a plan. And even if a player may have passed up a very good shot, but that was because it was part of a grander play. And they were instructed to do that and they were building to something else. And without knowing that plan, it's dangerous to make those types of assumptions. So it's much more our place to identify the occurrences of things and report on what did happen, not so much what should have happened or what might be related to something else. So
got it.
It's an important mindset for us. And then we empower fans or the teams or the media outlets. We provide that data to them so they can make those decisions or they can, you know, draw their own conclusions in terms of what things are related and why one outcome was, you know, partially determined from some other set of variables.
Yeah. Well, I actually, you know, as I'm hearing you talk, that seems just like a data science best practice anyway, right? That you're not there to put value judgments on what you're seeing, that you're there to like present what you're seeing in the most objective possible way or the most factual possible way. And then the people who do the analysis and the people who kind of then figure out recommendations or what to do next, that's a different discipline, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And the example that comes to my mind immediately is with our defensive box score. So we have this incredible algorithm that we've taught the machine the basic principles of NBA defense. And through that, it can identify who is primarily responsible for guarding each offensive player every moment of the game. And inevitably, I get the question of, well, you know, does higher, you know, pressure or higher defensive scores mean they're playing better defense? And no, it doesn't necessarily mean that, right? Maybe that defender was instructed not to guard the player because he's not a very good shooter, right? And we're not, and I always use the same line. It's like we're not telling you what should have happened on the court. That's for the coach and the players to know what should have happened. We're telling you what did happen. Like, this is the amount of pressure. This is who was primarily responsible at this moment. I can't say if that was the strategy or not. The team has to analyze the data and know what the coach's plan was in the scouting report to make those decisions.
Got it. So, no, that makes a lot of sense. So let's talk a little bit about the fan experience. I'm really intrigued by the idea of what you're doing for fans and how you're thinking about the fan experience of the game. And I know that obviously during the pandemic, you had to make some choices in terms of what you're going to deliver to fans. And it seems like, I don't know, it feels like in any creative pursuit, sometimes constraint unlocks like lots of creativity. So I'd love to hear a little bit about that.
Sure. You know, I'm not necessarily an expert in all the areas of things. And frankly, I'm intrigued to hear what is most insightful to you. You provide an interesting vantage point for me and as a, what would we say, a novice fan of the NBA? what's the right word? But so I'm interested in what basketball stats or what you'd like to learn about the players, because that gives me an interesting insight.
Yeah. No, for sure. I'm happy to share. You know, my goal here is to create as little cringe as possible. You know, I'm really interested in sort of I think Steph Curry is what, like 6'2", 6'3", something like that, which is almost exactly the same height as my son, who does not play basketball. And the way that the team operates to enable him to be the best player that he can be is really, you know, stunning to me, because it's a completely different way of operating than having somebody like, you know, Shaquille O'Neal, who is like much, much taller, some of these players who are just much, much taller. And that changes the way that the game is played. And I find that really interesting. I find the sort of team mechanics of it really, really interesting. So that's something I would love to learn, because obviously you're going to be, you know, you're going to be playing with Kevin Durant in a very different way from the way that you're going to be playing with Steph Curry. And so, you know, as a Warriors fan, I kind of love that idea. I love that idea. And I find it intriguing. I find the team implications really interesting.
Yeah, and that's the why basketball's awesome, right? There's so many interactions between those players, and there's so many ways we can represent that. And we want to try to provide as many of them as we can, so that you, as the fan of Steph Curry or the fan of Data or both, can dig in and figure out what it is that makes Steph Curry special, what it is with his relationship with Draymond Green and how Draymond screens for him or does handoffs. And then if you have educated yourself on those things, hopefully you'll watch more games, because now you'll see it and you'll recognize that and you'll see those trends in real time as you're engaging with the live product.
Yeah, that's actually really exciting, because I've had, I can't tell you how many times, you know, a conversation with my husband, or he'll show me like a piece of film and I'll watch it and he'll be like, see that? And I'll be like, no. You see that? Be like, no. And then by the 19th time, I'm like, oh, I got it. I saw the thing. And it's really, that is really exciting. And it's exciting to get that sense of like, I mean, to me, you know, as somebody who likes dance, you know, it's balletic, in a sense, right? It's balletic with a goal. And that feels really neat. But it also raises the question to me, because you do have, you know, you want to raise new generations of players and new generations of fans, and reach audiences that maybe, you know, people like me that maybe you haven't reached in the past. I'm curious about some of the challenges, right? Because basketball does have a very specific lexicon, and it would be, I'll just be brave and vulnerable and tell you, I spent quite a lot of time on the internet searching terms, going like, what is a post-op? What is a screen?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Well, I wanted to be able to have this conversation, but I also wanted to think about like, what are those kind of contextual or cognitive challenges that you have as a statistician, as a product manager, in terms of trying to fulfill the desires and needs of the most, you know, incredibly passionate fans, and then, you know, people who you'd like to bring along with you. And that must be a very slippery slope.
Two things come to mind, I would say, and that you're right on the basketball lexicon. Although I wonder, did you research because you for the conversation or because you wanted to keep the podcast under 4 hours?
Yeah, but I thought maybe having you explain basketball terms to me was not going to be our best episode.
Yeah, I think probably for the best for all the fans out there. So the lexicon is challenging, and it's challenging not just from the standpoint of the fan, but also from all the latest and greatest in AI and machine learning. Like that lexicon is very unique. And
yeah,
you think through generative AI, right? A drive in a basketball sense is a very different use of that word than the rest of the world. A board, you know, is meant to be a rebound when we say it, but that's not probably what the generative AI model was trained on. So we have to be very careful in some of those and how we use it. And that's the first challenge. But the second challenge that comes to mind is, how do we build something that is interesting to a wide variety of fans, from your, you know, novice fans to your hardcore fans and everyone in between, but also is understandable? So I go back to the dunk score. We're using the latest and greatest data science techniques and are very proud of the data science of it, but the result isn't a highly complex you know, fancy model that's hard to understand or some number that's difficult to interpret. Basically, everyone who watches the NBA knows what a dunk is, and we're scoring them. Higher is better, but, you know, higher is cooler or whatever, however you want to interpret it. But it's understandable is the key. And we're always looking for ways to use the latest and greatest technology and data science techniques, but also make sure the result is approachable and understandable. And somebody can look at that and go, I know what to, I have context for that. I know what to make of that and not have to spend a lot of time doing the work that you did to research all the terminology and the, and what this number means and why I should care about it. And we don't want to ask that, make that ask of a fan just to engage with the data science we're trying to do.
Oh, for sure. But, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, it didn't take me that long to figure it out. I do not ascribe that, you know, I do not ascribe any kind of prior knowledge to that. Like it's a very intuitive term once you realize, okay, there are all these things that go into it and those things are actually fairly intuitive. And I think that to me is the sign of a really good metric, that it's a composite of a lot of different things. It gives you information that is useful that you can use in multiple ways. It does not over index on one. I mean, obviously, in any algorithm, you're indexing on some things and against other things, but it doesn't, like, it gives you a sense of something that is a collection of numbers, attributes, et cetera, that describe a situation. And I think that's, I mean, that to me is sort of what a metric is supposed to do, and then gives you the freedom to figure out, okay, so now how do I take this dunk score versus that dunk score, and how do I evaluate that? And maybe is there a way for me to refine that number over time? I mean, it worked for me.
I appreciate it. I totally agree. And it works on multiple levels too, in that it's exciting at the surface level. I have this new metric that describes this awesome dunk that we're watching. But then it also provides many layers deeper if for the fans that want to engage with it and they want to see, was it the player's jump, his vertical height? Was it the defensive contest? Was it the power of the dunk? And how did these numbers come to be? And there's more layers to that to be uncovered for the fans that want to dig deeper. And our hope is it works for both, right?
Yeah. Yep. It's a real balancing act, which kind of brings me to my next question for you, Charlie, which is, what advice do you have, or what have you learned that you could share with other leaders? Because it seems as though, like, you know, while we're having this conversation, I'm thinking a lot of what you're saying is so relevant for other industries. What advice do you have that you'd love to share?
Don't jump. Does that count?
Don't jump. Please do not jump. And if you do, don't land on Coach K.
Exactly. For me, at least, the cross-functional nature of my career experience, I don't know if that phrase makes sense, but the has been incredibly valuable to me. And being confident and comfortable in a lot of different settings, talking to a lot of different people, from data scientists to software engineers to product managers to NBA basketball coaches and media members and so forth, has really, being able to go between those has been incredibly valuable. And I would imagine that applies to any industry probably, right? There's lots of different stakeholders and lots of different people within the company, and the ability to communicate and relay why we're doing what we're doing and the priorities across those companies and hear the feedback from all those sides to help inform the priorities has been what has helped me more than anything.
Do you have an example of that? Is there something that you learned that you ended up acting on?
The most important thing for me and for our team is always explaining why we're doing what we're doing. Because the engineers are brilliant. The data scientists are brilliant. If they understand why they're doing what they're doing, they're going to get to a better outcome, a better outcome than I would have envisioned if it were only my thought on how to proceed. So we invest a lot of time whenever we're considering a project or trying to solve a problem, making sure everyone understands why we're doing what we're doing. And that, you know, I didn't realize at the time, but I was learning that from Coach K as a great leader. And he was very clear on understanding the team dynamic and making sure everyone was working towards the same goals. But then learned it again as a product manager and through product management training of explaining why. And there's countless examples of how the engineers came up with much better solutions than I ever would have. But it wouldn't have been possible unless they had a firm understanding of why this was a priority and why we're doing what we're doing.
Yeah. I mean, I hear this kind of theme a lot. And it has to do with keeping an open mind, staying curious, being willing to experiment, and then remembering the context and the domain expertise that you need in order to be able to use these technologies. Because, you know, you could, I mean, this is the perfect place for analysis paralysis, right? I mean, that is absolutely, you know, one of the dangers, I would imagine, when you have so many data points and you have so many possible outcomes and so many ways you could use the data, you have to figure out, you know, what is your why? What's your North Star, for sure?
Definitely. Definitely. There's so many directions we could go in terms of analyzing the data that helping the brilliant folks who work at the MBA, work with the data, understand why this matters to a fan or why it matters to the coach of the team or the media member leads us to help come up with a better solution and faster and more efficiently and solve the problem better as a team and working together as a team as well.
So anything you can share about what fans can expect next? Like, where do you think this is going to go?
We're just scratching the surface on what this data is capable of doing. I think we're excited about doing more things like the dunk score in the future. We certainly want to get more and more of it into our broadcasts during the live game viewing experience that then ties back to, you know, the stat site and other parts of our products that will help them be engaged, and for the fans that want to dig in can do that. But, you know, the fact that it is, the data is so vast, there's so many things we can do, and that we can now do it in real time within, you know, with milliseconds of latency, we're really hoping that unlocks more and more activation during the live game, whether it's in the broadcast or on the app as a second screen and so forth. That we're excited about that, and I'll, as a lifetime basketball nerd, there'll be a never-ending list of things I want to learn about basketball and all the events to detect and algorithms to write and things to teach basketball, things to teach the machine, that we'll never run out of on that side of the roadmap either.
That's amazing. Well, when you get to the next 29 body parts, you know, please, you know, email me, let me know.
You'll be the first to know. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Charlie. This has been really, really fun. I appreciate you so much. I love what you're doing. I think it's fascinating and just incredibly fun, and looking forward to hearing more.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you, Susan. This was great.
One of the most fun and terrifying parts of prepping for this episode was speaking with my friends, my family, and our producers, who are all passionate basketball fans, and realizing how much there is to learn. As Charlie said, the game is so fast and so fluid and so hard to measure. It's about human bodies and movement and split-second decisions and team dynamics and the fans. And yes, it's also about running a great business. And all of this is happening in real time, both in the game and in the technology that helps us understand it. But for fans, basketball is life. And in addition to giving me my new favorite factoid that the NBA tracks 29 body parts 60 times per second, it's what makes it such a great example of how strategic use of data and AI can serve so many stakeholders in so many ways. So Charlie was joking that he kind of majored in basketball in college, but underneath his modesty is an important point. It helped him build relationships with lots of different people. And this is so valuable, because even watching the same exact game, different people are going to have different perspectives and different objectives. And I bet Coach K never imagined that we'd be talking about his leadership style on a technology podcast. But a big plus one, that even when the stakes are at their highest, it's healthy to give your team grace and even have a sense of humor when things go wrong. It's less about what happened and more, as Charlie said, about how you adapt.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode. And as I'm sure you know, new podcasts live and die on engagement. So please like, comment, share, tell your friends, and let us know what you'd like to hear about. We're listening. If you'd like to learn more about how people and organizations are innovating with Microsoft Azure, visit azure.microsoft.com. The Leading the Shift podcast is a place for experts to share their insights and opinions. As students of the future of technology, Microsoft values inputs from a diverse set of voices. That said, the opinions and findings of our guests are their own, and they may not necessarily reflect Microsoft's own research or positions. Leading the Shift is a production of Microsoft Azure. I'm your host, Susan Ettlinger. Our executive producers are Haley Meehan, Aaron Russell, Eric Williams, and me. Production support provided by the incredible team at Indigo Slate.